Reed goes jazz. Surprise, surprise. First love, then jazz. What next?
From Coney Island to St. Mark's Place.
From Berlin to Alaska.
From onstage at Max's to Tai Chi classes.
From Lou Reed to Lou Lou.
This is
Talking Lou.
I enjoy drugs and things are awesome.
Hi, I'm Paul Colantoni.
And I'm Jim Callahan.
And welcome to Talking Lou. This is episode number 8, and we're discussing Rock and Roll Heart.
Rock and Roll Heart. Talking Lou, season 2, The Revenge. This time, it's personal.
It is personal. This is his first album for Arista. Is it Arista or Arista?
I've been saying Arista this whole time.
Yeah, I think it's Arista.
Okay.
And even more so, because then we went over to Arista.
Mm-hmm.
Or as Clive would have it, Arista.
Oh yeah, there's a big controversy over that.
Yeah.
How do you say the name of the company?
Well, if you're around Clive, you say Arista.
It is. I have received official memos from the company with the little notations. It's Arista.
Yeah. Not on RCA anymore.
He's done. He's out. Clive Davis basically pulled him out of debt because, as the story goes, it's, and I don't have all like the ins and outs of it, but basically, after Coney Island comes out, the record does okay, and Lou's on tour here and there, and then basically steps off of a plane, makes a phone call, and finds out you're completely broke.
Yeah.
You got about, and Lou only had about $15 left to his name because that was what was in his pocket at the time.
That's broke.
Yeah. He was in the hole to RCA due to like a number of things. Well, the lawsuits being the big thing against Dennis Katz and I think Steve Katz, his old producer as well. They got mixed up in there. So the brothers Katz and then also RCA had been covering the tab at the hotel that he'd been staying in.
Right.
Is it the Gramercy? He owes them at least $700,000.
Oh my God!
That's 1975-76 money.
Right.
So it's a little bit of a hard time.
A little in the red.
Yeah. And so Clive Davis, who had been palling around with all of 1975, the story goes one or two ways. Either Lou came to Clive hat in hand, like please help me out, or Clive came to Lou, like hey man, come on board.
Yeah. Let me rescue you from bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And basically,
and he did. Either which way, Lou was really on board for it. Clive looked at Lou as a potential, like you know, a wild card, but a potential big record seller and a moneymaker because he'd already done it. He'd proven he could.
Mm-hmm.
With Transformer was a big hit, and Rock and Roll Animal had been like a success well, and it was. The success was still paying off for him. So going forward into this album, yeah, Clive expected big things, but Lou was going to Lou, and the title Rock and Roll Heart, I kind of think of, you know, Friday the 13th Part 8 is called Jason Takes Manhattan.
Okay.
But the joke of that movie is that most of that movie takes place on a boat. They don't actually get to Manhattan to like the well over the 1 hour mark.
Okay. Well, I'm not that familiar
with it. Well, the movie takes place, is mostly filmed in Vancouver. You get 5 minutes of Times Square and then that's about it. Rock and Roll Heart, I feel, is kind of the same way where there's like a couple of out and out rock songs, but mostly this is a weird jazz fusion record.
Yeah, there's jazz rock to it. There's some of the early, very early rock and roll, you know, alluded to.
It's got and it even has like a couple of leftover Velvet Underground songs in here too. But like it's just, it's jarring when you first put it on.
It's not jazz, but it's jazzy. It's got elements of R&B and funk in there.
Yeah.
But it's still a fairly straightforward record.
It's a real mixed bag. We've been spoiled so far because aside from the first album, I think from Transformer through Coney Island Baby, it's like every track on there has been objectively good. I mean, we got our favorites, but they've all been objectively good. I feel personally this is one where there's some great tracks on here, there's a few okay ones, and then there's some out and out garbage.
Yeah, it's funny because like punk was happening at this time.
Yep.
And these aren't punk songs, but the song structure is very simple on them.
They're short.
Verse, chorus, not a lot of bridges and stuff like that.
Most of them
fade out at the end.
Yeah, most of them are about like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, you're in and out of there. This has been like, since I first heard it, I came into it knowing like three songs off their bat. Temporary Thing, Vicious Circle, and the title track, Rock and Roll Heart.
Okay.
And so that led me to one impression of how great this record could be, because those are all, I think the pick of the litter for sure. And it was jarring right from Jump Street when like the trumpet goes right in, or the saxophone, whatever it is, the saxophone, excuse me. Yeah, it just threw me off. But at this point, after years and years of digesting it, this album specifically, beginning to end on like Rainy Days.
Sure.
I think maybe it's just the jazziness of it. It sort of lends itself to that. And I can like just sort of leave it on in the background as a whole piece and just sort of tune in and out of it for the stuff that I don't like. But I am not thrilled overall.
Right. It's not as great as some of the past stuff. I say great a lot on this podcast, but it has songs that I like, and overall I like it, but it's not going to be in my top five.
No,
far.
Yeah, I mean, like there's a couple of songs in here that would make my top 10 favorite Lou Reed songs
playlist,
all the time.
Yeah,
yeah, Temporary Thing probably being the best, but man, it's a bit of a weird one.
Sure. Some of the background information: it was released October of 1976 and was recorded at the Record Plant in NYC. 37 minutes, 42 seconds, and it's 12 tracks. This one was self-produced by Lou himself. Singles from the album were I Believe in Love, Rock and Roll Heart, and Chooser and The Chosen One.
Terrible choice.
Yeah, I don't know why that would be released as a single. It's an instrumental, but we'll get to that when we do track by track. The cover art is a photo by Mick Rock. It's all blue. It says Lou Reed in capital letters in red.
I kind of like the cover. I like the color of the blue. Mm-hmm. It's but at the same time, it almost doesn't look like him. It looks like he's going for like a weirdly different look. I mean, just coming right off of how Coney Island Baby went, like just the cover there, or even Sally Can't Dance. It's just like this is like more of like
The cover kind of looks half done. Like,
yeah,
it's just a proof that they haven't approved yet. And it almost, this is only 76, but it looks like a 1980s. Kind of new wavy, kind of singer songwriter cover.
You know,
Mike and the Mechanics, or
if you put even George Michael on that thing,
sure,
with that,
yeah,
the same sort of photo style, I believe it.
Right,
you know,
right.
Just like his face, though, the way his hair kind of looks, just in that photo, it's a little strange.
Now here's Jim Callahan with your 1976 news.
It's the bicentennial for the United States of America.
Oh yeah.
200 years of democracy. We're almost at 250, Paul. And we're about to see the complete collapse of it too. Isn't that fun?
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, we're on our way out. Jerry Ford is still in charge. He's falling downstairs every chance he gets.
Hitting his head on stuff.
Yeah. He still is, I think, probably the clumsiest president that in close to our lifetime, although Joe Biden's definitely giving him a run for his money.
Well, every president has. Remember what?
Oh,
somebody
yeah.
fell off a Segway. Yeah, somebody fell off a bike.
I mean, Bush almost choked to death on a pretzel. Obama got, like, I don't know if it's a clumsy move, but he got hit in the face by a Secret Service guy, like, playing basketball.
Oh,
I remember
okay.
that. He had a bloody nose.
I remember that gutter ball when he was bowling. Was
like, but Bush won, threw up on a prime minister.
Oh, right.
Yeah, there was a lot. Japan, like, it's a, yeah, it's a good thing. A lot of good times.
So I'm probably the clumsiest podcaster out there because I hit my head on like everything. Stuff that's way taller than me, I somehow hit my head on.
Is that right?
All right, sorry.
Fantastic.
I'm real clumsy.
Patty Hearst trial gets started in January, making it like the third or fourth trial of the century.
Right.
She's immediately found guilty within like 2 months. Her lawyer, by the way, was F. Lee Bailey, who gets to be in the next and final trial of the century because he works on the O.J. Simpson case.
Right.
Jim Callahan became the British Prime Minister.
Huh.
It's Callahan with a G.
Oh, okay.
Callahan. An Irishman became the Prime Minister of Britain. Just let that sink in. I don't know anything more about that except he's the last guy in charge just before Maggie Thatcher.
Oh, gotcha.
Our overlords, the reason why the term podcast exists, the people who created it, Apple Computers, are founded this year in 1976. So thank you very much, masters. The first space shuttle, the Enterprise, is built and rolls out of a NASA hangar. Jerry Ford, I brought that up earlier. He almost loses the nomination to Ronald Reagan in the Republican Party, but then he loses the election and then Jimmy Carter's elected. Big deal. Okay, in New York City, the Son of Sam serial killer is out there, and then he's finally caught in August.
Berkowitz.
Yes, big mess. Oh,
and his neighbor's dog.
Oh, excuse me. He starts going around in 76. He's not caught till 77.
I was gonna say,
that's my error right there. Son of Sam, he's running around. The Democratic National Convention's in New York City that year. There's a huge fire at the Puerto Rican Social Club in the Bronx that killed 25 people, injured 24 more. And that was over a jealous lover, like a lover's quarrel sort of thing. A Long Island family named the Lutz flee their home due to ghosts. And that's what inspires the Amityville Horror.
Oh, okay.
That story, like, makes the rounds. Oh, and a really cool, fun story is the bicentennial. So New York City has a huge thing. There's a ton of ships in the harbor, a ton of military. The president and the vice president are in town. And so a huge smuggling operation from Colombia, under the cover of all the ships in the harbor.
Right.
They bring their own sailboats right into the harbor. They're loaded with tons of marijuana. And they unload the marijuana, minding their own business, into, like, waiting trucks. And those trucks go out into the streets of New York City.
That's a ballsy maneuver.
It's just, they called it Operation Sail.
Yeah, but good name.
It's just, like, amazing story. I just, like, that's just the Cliff's Notes of it. But, like, wow.
Where's the movie of that?
I want to know. I want to see that.
Let's write a script, Jim.
Yeah, let's get it done. On January 1st, 1976, a struggling boxer fights the world champion Apollo Creed in a about like 20-round battle. Mm-hmm. He doesn't win the fight, Paul, but he learns for the first time in his life that he's not just another bum from the neighborhood.
Right.
The movie Rocky does very well at the box office. Other big movies this year, my favorite movie of all time, Taxi Driver.
Oh, okay.
All the President's Men about the Nixon scandal. Mm-hmm. The movie Network, which was a comedy and a satire at the time, but now just looks like a documentary. The movie Carrie, the very first Stephen King novel and adaptation. And Assault on Precinct 13, like John Carpenter's right. Second movie, excellent film. David Bowie stars in The Man Who Fell to Earth. And King Kong 1976, the one where the ape climbs the Twin Towers.
Oh. Is that the one where they give him a giant artificial heart?
It's been like literally I saw like when I was a kid 20 and I odd that, years. I only catch like bits and pieces
of
it.
So that's
TV.
The one with the dude in it, right?
It's got Jeff. What's his name? Yeah, Jeffrey Lebowski. Jeff Bridges. Jeffrey LeBridges Lebowski.
Something like that.
That guy. Yeah, he's in it. Meryl Streep was almost in it, and then I think she got fired. Mm. It was like she was still a struggling actress.
And that was your 1976 news with Jim Callahan.
Here's what was on the Billboard Top 10, like single-wise, in October 1976.
Okay.
Number one, Chicago's If You Leave Me Now.
Yeah.
Rick Dees and his cast of idiots, Disco Duck.
Mm.
Walter Murphy and the Big Apple Band, A Fifth of Beethoven. That's the one where it's Beethoven's fifth, but it's like remixed a little bit.
Oh, I
gotcha. That tune. I got it. Boz Gags, Lowdown.
Oh, I love Boz.
Orleans, Still the One.
Mm-hmm.
Irritating song. Wild Cherry, Play That Funky Music.
Mm.
Casey and the Sunshine Band, Shake, Shake, Shake. Get the robotic Richard Simmons out there. Hall & Oates, She's Gone. Bee Gees, Love So Right. And here's a rock song, Steve Miller, Rockin' Me. You know,
I don't think I know that Steve Miller
song. You know it because you've
Keep on Rocking Me, Baby.
Right, okay, Keep on Rocking Me, Baby.
I know that one.
Yeah,
sorry.
You know that tune. What was it? Boz Scaggs, I think it was. What was the tune? Yeah, I think it was the Boz Scaggs song that, like, every time, like, I'm in a supermarket, I've heard that. That's just, like, you're in the frozen food section. It's there's a pretty good Patton Oswalt routine.
Except the one where it's like, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Oh, that's a good one. That's probably on my yacht rock mix.
It is. It would work as a yacht rock song. Cause, but
most
like,
of the stuff does.
There, but just...
Because then it sings like this. And it's like, it's so fun.
But it reminds me of the Patton Oswalt routine where he's talking about being in the frozen food aisle and he hears Toto's Africa and then just thinks he's... Then just becomes gloriously suicidal. Ugh. And then he kills himself. But like... If anybody saw that, they'd be like, oh, Toto's Africa is playing. He's like, oh, no, he's fine. That totally makes sense. Because it's just that it all makes sense. He was looking at lean cuisines, and that was the end. Like, that sort of works for Boz Scaggs, at least in my opinion. Lou Reed and John Cale play a show together in New York for the first time in forever, completely unannounced. Also on stage with them, Patti Smith and David Byrne, who had just formed the Talking Heads. but there's no reunion. They like it's like kind of like got just a one-off little thing that they do together. And Lou and the Everyman Band lend their talents to Nelson Slater's album Wild Angel. And this is an album I still have to like properly listen to.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with this.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it at all, but it's all like sitting there on YouTube, but it's like they've got numerous tracks, like they're all over the record. There's a song called We that they're all on. It's like mm-hmm. that was like kind of a single. The album did not do well at all. It was also on Arista Records, but the cover of it, if you check it out, is like a woman in bondage. Okay. Which was just a little too racy for the time, and it the record company was kind of like a little disgusted with it, I think.
Wringing their hands.
Yeah, so they just let that one go. And as we go into the record proper, like as we said, Lou got saved by Clive Davis. And also, Clive had just gotten Bruce Springsteen and Patti Smith to the label.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually probably the reason why John Cale and Patti Smith are on the same stage, because John Cale produced that first Patti Smith album,
right?
Actually. And Lou seemed like the logical next step for Arista and like what was going on. So Davis, by the way, had already worked with Billy Joel, Janis Joplin, Earth, Wind, and Fire. And in a few more years, he would sign a very young Whitney Houston.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, Clive Davis knew what he was talking about. So a lawyer agreement was made so RCA would release Lou from the contract, and Lou was quickly back in the studio with the whole Everyman Band ensemble to work on Rock and Roll Heart. From conception to finished album, that was all of a month, just 4 weeks. Lou wrote all the lyrics, all the music, mm-hmm. basically on the fly very quickly. It was done in spite of the fact that Clive Davis offered to produce the album with Lou, but Lou refused any help or influence. Clive wanted especially to polish a few songs into workable singles, particularly the song Rock and Roll Heart. Even begging other people in Lou's sphere to get the man to listen, Lou would have none of it. Clive asked Lou's touring guitarist, Jeffrey Ross, who is not the Roastmaster General comedian
yeah.
that maybe people are familiar with.
The Bumpin' Mics guy?
Yes, the Bumpin' Mic man. The other half of Bumpin' Mic. Jeffrey Ross tried to get Lou to listen, and Lou wouldn't have any of it. So ultimately, the Lou, as it is.
The Lou.
The Lou.
I like it.
The album is what it is, and that's all thanks to Lou Reed.
Yeah,
and
totally self-produced.
Yes.
For the personnel, we had Lou Reed, of course, on vocals, guitar, and piano. We had Marty Fogel on saxophone. Michael Fanfara on piano, Hammond organ, synthesizer. He was from Electric Flag and Rhinoceros. I think we mentioned him before.
Yeah, and he's also, for the live band, he's considered the band leader.
Oh, okay.
So like he's like the guy that they all like take cues from,
right.
Big time.
And we had Bruce Yaw on bass guitar, Michael Sichorski on drums. And then on You Wear It So Well, Garland Jeffries does backing vocals. Now, he wrote a song called Wild in the Streets, the same song later covered by the Circle Jerks.
I was wondering about that.
Isn't that crazy?
No kidding.
So, like, yeah, they would name their album Wild in the Streets later.
That's awesome.
So, and that's pretty much the Everyman Band.
Yeah, Jeffrey Ross, who I mentioned, is, like, on tour, but he does not appear on this record.
Right. Okay, I think we're ready to go track by track.
Yeah, let's do it.
Track number one, I Believe in Love.
Yeah, again, the first time I heard this album, I think, I looked for years, actually, for like a physical copy of it. I found it on vinyl maybe 2009, something like that, which I still have. But I was still buying CDs for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and then finally I started getting like digital stuff. I was pretty late to that.
Yeah, me too. Like everybody had iPods.
Yeah,
I never had an iPod. I just kept getting discs.
I didn't finally get an iPod.
And used CDs were so cheap.
Yeah. So. I was buying up used CDs like crazy, and I got like an iPod in like late 06, early 07, somewhere around there, and. Then when I finally did, that's when I started using iTunes, and then the Lou Reed albums I couldn't find, like, physically. That's how I started buying
that way, yeah.
So the two major ones I got would have been Rock and Roll Heart and Street Hassle. And with Rock and Roll Heart, that was the one where, like I said at the top of the show, like, I'd had that that box set disc. So, like, I knew some of what was coming up.
Right.
But, like, I didn't expect this jarring of an intro. Like, yeah, it was just like, as soon as I just heard the saxophone like kicking, I was like, ah!
Yeah, this horns intro, it's got a warm sound.
It is, ultimately, but it's just, the first time you're like expecting it, it's like, maybe you're not expecting it, it's just like, it just throws you off.
Okay.
You know, especially when you're coming off of, especially in context, when you think back.
And the order of albums.
Of the order of albums, and like, I think anybody who got into Lou Reed via, like, say, Rock and Roll Animal, especially, because that was like, how he was making a lot of fans, like, mm-hmm. there's bound to be disappointments abound, like, of everything. That's like, this is probably like three strikes and you're out, because like, you got Metal Machine Music, which right. that's just noise. Coney Island Baby, which we fought back against the tag of that being a soft rock album,
yeah,
but it is like lighter. And now this, and like, Jesus Christ, you'd be like, ah, oh, fuck you, if you're looking from a certain point of view. It's like, it may be just a little bit too much.
But I Believe in Love, it's got like that early rock and roll kind of feel with the horns, and it's basically a song about music.
Yeah. There, I do like one lyrical flourish, which mm-hmm. I'll call out, because the lyrics are pretty basic for the most part in this album. But he says very early on, and I believe in the Iron Cross.
Yeah.
And as everybody knows, that's a fun little reference to the fact that he had those terrible Iron Crosses in his hair.
Shaved
there.
Into his head. Yeah.
I don't think I ever caught that until I really, like, once again, just really paid attention to the lyrics. I was like, oh, that's kind of funny.
And it's a pretty innocent song, except for that early line being like slightly provocative, like right out of the gate.
There. Yeah.
But it's very upbeat, especially for him.
That's true.
Especially recently for him. Yeah. And it's got some positivity there.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I would go to bat for it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I'm processing my feelings over the years about like how I felt about the song. And like as this album as a whole, I'm of two minds for it, you know. Sure. But this one, you know, I would say it passes for me, you know. This is going to be me being a bit of a fucking snotty prick over here.
That's
so,
all right.
So, like, maybe if I'm a little too combative, I'm sorry. But that's just right out the gate. The last couple weeks of us preparing for this album, I had small headaches listening to a couple of these songs.
Really?
Straight up. Not this one, almost, but, like, as soon as it kicks in, I'm just, there is a reflex of me to just go, and then I can settle in and it's cool, but like, it's just a little bit, this is just not the album I really want to go right into.
Jim's
right now.
Not that crazy about the intro.
But it's not bad. It's really, at the end of the day, not really a bad song. So, anything else to say about I Believe in Love? Do you believe in that song, Paul?
Yeah. I think I do.
Ringing endorsement.
Leave out the Iron Cross part, and I'm.
Honestly, at this point, I think the Iron Cross part is what saves
it. It's like a joke. Yeah,
that's what works for me.
Track number two, Banging on My Drum. So, in another world, this song would be played at sporting events, like that Todd Rundgren song. I don't want to work. I just want to bang on the drum all day.
Yeah, or Gary Glitter. There's the other one. That guy.
This one has more rock and guitars than the song before it. It's actually really similar to Personality Crisis by the New York Dolls.
That's a good call.
Yeah.
Wow. Like I was actually really struggling. Like thinking, what does this remind me of? But you're right. Personality Crisis, which is like a great goddamn song.
Track one on album one.
This is like one of the best. Like, hey, it's us. Announcing
introduction.
It's wonderful.
Now, it's not much lyrics even there. It's kind of almost a novelty song.
Yeah, it's kind of that. Well, like, I guess it's great that you say that, because now you're contextualizing it for me.
Well, there's like less intricate lyrics than No Fun by the Stooges. At least mm-hmm. that had a couple little parts.
But just even saying novelty song, I'm immediately like thinking this is like kind of a less thought out version of Coney Island Baby now to me, because it's like that's what he started out doing was novelty songs, as we mentioned way back when.
Then you get to picture Lou Reed in his jacket and shade just banging on a little drum.
Yeah.
It's like, that's kind of...
if they had thought to make a video for this, that actually might have been pretty funny.
Yeah, deadpan.
Just like him being deadpan while like there's a crazy, like, you know, Beastie Boys-esque, like fight for your right to party, like, kind of thing going on.
Hope no bad people come.
I mean, that could be fun. I mean, sure. We'll get into Lou Reed videos, like, in a couple.
I can't wait for that.
Down, that'll be probably season 3 for us at this point. But, like, yeah, he made some good videos, some crazy 80s outrageous shit. But like, you know, for the 70s, they just weren't, like, few exceptions, they just weren't making those.
Yeah, there was like promo clips, but they're almost always just a live, yeah, you know, lip synced live appearance.
I think Pink Floyd did some stuff even before The Wall. They had like an animated video or two.
Okay.
But like, it's still few and far between. You're 100% right.
Yeah, we're still way pre-MTV.
Oh, yeah.
So, but this one, yeah, it's a very simple song. You got a sax solo briefly and then a guitar solo. And then, like a lot of songs on here, does the fade out thing. I think almost all of them does that gradual fade out.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that, but you're right. It's
at least the first three in a row.
It's like there's not much to it. He's just banging on his drum, and he's having lots of fun. But I sort of am. I don't know. Again, this is the thing. If I'm not really paying attention to it, it's just there in the background, and I'm fine with it. But just not my fave.
That's all right, man. They don't all have to be your favorite.
I know. I
remember in the very beginning, this was like, yeah, I hope I'm not just like, everything's great. And
yeah, well, we've finally gotten to a thing where I'm just like right back at the beginning where I'm like less than enthusiastic.
I've had some complaints. Good taste, I wasn't a fan of.
Yeah, that was like, I think might have been our only small disagreement, just because I thought like the music kind of rocked on that song, but you were just completely put off by the lyrics. I found it kind of funny even in a terrible sort of way.
Thumbs down.
Like, no. But like that's about as close as we've come to like fighting on the show. I was looking forward to more, but so far it's been pretty civil. I'm surprised.
We got a lot of records to get through, man.
Yeah, we'll see where we end up.
And so moving on to track three, Follow the Leader. Another very simple one. It's got a funky beat. I'll give it that.
This was the unreleased Velvet Underground song.
Oh, right.
Just one of two. And this is not a Velvet Underground song that I think I know in its original form off the top of my head. I don't know where it was. Nobody back in the day probably would have heard it, because a lot of the stuff that, like, when we've called that out before, these are, like, they've been B-sides that were released long after the fact. Mm-hmm. So in the 70s, nobody would have known that shit.
Yeah, nobody'd heard it yet.
But, like, this is one for me where I'm, like, I'm copying to straight ignorance. I don't know this Velvet Underground song.
No, I've never heard the Velvet Underground version, if it's out there.
Yeah, I'm sure it is at this point in this day and age.
But it's just another New York City song, you know, where it's like he does as many New York songs as the Chili Peppers do about California.
Yeah, you're right. Let's in a context, maybe we should start tallying it up, the number of times he's mentioned New York City and like out there. If there's any crazy,
it's just nonstop.
If there's any super fans listening out there, like let us know how many times New York has been mentioned. I mean, like, and although I guess when you really break down, because he might not say the city, but he'll definitely name check streets.
Yeah.
So like a lot. Know. He's cruising Christopher Street like a couple different times, or Canal Street later on, St. Mark's Place.
Lexington.
Yeah, all those. Avenue B, Avenue D. Those are all New York streets that he's name checking, so that probably technically counts. But yeah, this song, I always think it's I always think it's going to be called a Do You Want to Dance? But then it's not. And then that just makes me think of the Ramones song, Do You Want to Dance? Which is a better song. This one's fine. It's just, I just don't care. It's just like, it just sort of happens.
First three are just really simple,
yeah,
na-na-na-na-na type of songs.
Yeah,
you know?
you just get into it, and then it is what it is. I will say, though, like, musically speaking, I have multiple listens, like, being completely fair. I think the music on this one in particular, the band is pretty tight.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, it's got a quick beat. It almost, because this is the era of disco, maybe it, like, part of me thinks that the album would have behooved it in a weird way if this had become like geared that way. If
maybe some of the disco bass lines.
Yeah, if Clive Davis had really taken hold of this album, he could have upped that bass, which I feel is turned down pretty low. And at least in the copies that I have the vinyl and the shitty digital copy. But like, I feel like you turn that up, because the bass player is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The band is tight. I'm not really faulting the band for anything here.
Yeah, something about the production seems kind of muddy to me.
And it's probably just,
I haven't listened to the vinyl version in a while. Just listened to digital in preparation.
Yeah.
While driving the truck for work, but I'd imagine it sounds the same. Pretty much the same.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it is what it is. This is one one of two or three that I wish had, like, honestly just been, like, straight-up disco songs.
Okay.
That's, like, I feel like it would have been an improvement.
No, I know what you mean. Exactly, you know? Yeah.
Let's Wear It So Well over here.
Yeah, track number four, You Wear It So Well. We got a piano intro, and yeah, we have Garland Jeffries doing the backup vocals. It sounds similar to some of his earlier ballad type of stuff, but to me it just doesn't have that overall...
There's no kick. There's bigness
to it.
Yeah, you know? It needs a little bit more. It's like, and it's, again, it's, actually this one I would rate a little bit higher than the first three, but it's also been one where, like, I never, like, seek it out. Like, it just, it's like, there's a couple, like, I have on my mix, my big Lou Reed mix that I love to, like, just,
the
like,
big shuffle. Old Lou Reed mix.
Yeah, that I can listen to anytime. This one's okay. It's, like, it's got it, but it's, like, it feels like it's stuck in second gear. And I know that means it's, by definition with the thing here, it's, like, it's a slowed down song. It's supposed to be. You're downshifting for this song anyway, but...
Right.
Like, it just doesn't kick the way it needs to really kick.
Yeah, it gets a little more animated with his vocal delivery at the end, like the whole outro. Uh-huh. But it's still, you know, just walking piano lines that I like. But overall, it's kind of like...
It's actually a good point. I really do think he's going for singing on this album.
Yeah.
Which, like, in a couple spots, he really changes it up. And
yeah,
I think
not
for the better.
Monotone, really.
But he's not monotone. Like, except for
most,
like,
of it.
Yeah, except for a couple, for, like, Vicious Circle, which actually really behooves it. But... For this one, it's just, I don't know. It the lyrics just ain't there, straight up. And the song's just a little too, like, sappy and slow, you know. I mean, but if I'm not really paying attention to it again, it just feels like it's just all of a piece, you know, and it's fine. The first four songs, they all just sort of, like, run together for me.
They sure do.
And but, like, you know, it's just whatever. It's a big whatever, man.
All right, track number five, Ladies Pay.
This one, though, I feel like is the first one that, for my money, where the album starts to, like, congeal a little bit more.
It was actually some subject matter besides just rock and roll.
The
New
subject
York.
Matter, sure, but even then, like, the lyrics are kind of, like, hit or miss for me, because, like, lyrically speaking, you're talking about soldiers and the wives of soldiers.
Yeah, like military wives.
Military wives, which, you know, I can, like... I don't know. I don't really know if I care, per se. And it's also, like, especially given everything we did with Berlin, literally talking about, like, the abuse of women and stuff, and then there might be vague reference to that even in Coney Island Baby. I don't know if I'm right or wrong about that album. But I will say, though, the band sounds fantastic. Mm-hmm. The piano-driven, like, drivenness of the whole song really works. Lou is just, like, sort of going off on the guitar the entire time.
Right.
Just, like, a little bit of freewheeling. What is it I'm trying to say? He is just, like, sort of just, like, noodling and, like, letting the guitar just sort of, like, slightly feed back a little bit.
Right.
If I got that right. And the song just works on that level, on a complete music level. And then, so it really doesn't even matter what he's saying, because by the time he's like, day and night, night and day, how the ladies pay. And then the song really kicks into a crescendo at the end.
Yeah, they speed it up a little bit for the outro and got a guitar solo going.
It is so good.
Yeah, it's
awesome. That part is just fantastic. That the song, like, really, really rips there. And, like, even through all the choruses of the song, the song feels alive. The album finally feels alive for the first time for me.
Sure. Yeah, I can see that.
It's really, really good. And I know, like reading about it, like, just the reviews, it really got taken to task. Like, this song in particular, like, people are like, oh, fuck off. But I don't know. I'm sticking up for this one. I think it's really, really good.
Yeah, I dig it. Okay, track number six, the title track, Rock and Roll Heart.
Great song.
Yeah, it's another one where he's talking about music, specifically rock music.
But, like, how many, really, it's not unique, but it's like he's, because it's not. But there's so many songs just about rock and roll.
Yeah.
There's so many songs that have declared rock and roll to be dead over the
rock
years.
Rock and roll is dead, yeah, yeah.
Lenny Kravitz did it, Marilyn Manson did it.
The Rubber News did Rock and Roll is Dead, and we don't care.
Yeah, there you go. It's been done. But that's okay.
And this reminds me a little bit of, like, who's the Bob Seger old-time rock and roll, where he's just talking about, well, I'm not into opera ballet or French New Wave movies. I've got a rock and roll heart. Or it's only rock and roll when I like it, and, you know, stuff.
Right.
Or but I like it. But
there's a... This is one of the first songs, like, that I'd heard off the record, like, as I was saying. And it always clicks with me. I like the casualness of it. I like just the whole... I like the chorus, like... I guess I'm just dumb because I knows I'm not smart.
but deep down inside, I got a rock and roll heart.
And just the phrase, like, I connect with, yeah, because that's me. I've devoted a lot of my life to rock and roll. Not much payoff, but...
I just relate to, like, I guess I'm just dumb because I knows I'm not smart. That always, that just sticks in my head for forever.
It's just kind of poking fun at the idea that rock and roll is for idiots, you know, compared to, let's say, jazz or classical or opera or ballet or whatever else he mentions in here.
I am bad at, I'm bad at, like, getting caught up on new wave French movies, though. I fell asleep trying to watch Breathless. Although I have seen Diabolique, so I could recommend that one. You want a good French New Wave film?
Okay, that's not Diabolic.
That's Diabolic.
That's Italian.
No, it's Diabolique.
Diabolique.
That's what that one is.
Okay. Yeah, just the phrase rock and roll heart made me think of... Murder City Devils have a song where the lyric goes, I got a preacher's mouth and a rock and roll heart, a rock and roll heart. And that band has referenced Iggy Pop and Slade, and I think it's probably a Lou Reed reference there.
I will just say that the lyrics on this one are fun. I like the whole third verse. I don't like messages or something meant to say, and right. I wish people like that would just go away. It's fun.
This is the like, guy that had members of Yes playing on his early stuff.
That's right, yeah. I'd already forgotten that fact. That's amazing. I forgot. He was like right there. And Steve fucking Winwood. Higher Love, it's classic.
Higher Love, man.
It's a good song. It's like fun. this is actually kind of like an old timer for Lou Reed for me.
Sure.
It's up there. But not much else to say on that matter.
Yeah. Track number 7, Chooser and the Chosen One. This is an instrumental one. I got some guitar chords that are arpeggio picked, and then that City Street saxophone.
This is the first honest to goodness like instrumental that wasn't a thing that was hidden on the Berlin 8-track,
right,
as you pointed out.
Which I just picked up sealed in an old furniture shop.
Jealous.
Sometimes these things just find me. Like, how did I find that?
You're a magnet for it. I found that, if we haven't mentioned on the show already, I did find Pauly, like, an 8-track of Rock and Roll Animal.
Yeah.
Like, for $8. That one was not sealed, but it does work.
Yeah, so. This one was sealed and it was $2.
Yeah, even better.
What else do I get? A Raspberry's 8-track. $2.
He's finding all the 8-tracks. If you have 8-tracks for Pauly, send your DMs to Destroy All Radio, Inc.
Yeah, I'll take them off your hands.
On Instagram. DM Pauly Thunders.
I'm ahead of the curve. I've been collecting these things for a while. Nobody else is.
Yeah. It's just, you find them in the wild sometimes.
I just got one in the mail of the hardcore band Integrity. They re-released all their albums on, like, I think only 25 made on 8-track.
No kidding.
So I got one of them.
Good for you.
Pretty cool.
And you said Chooser and the Chosen One was a single for this?
That's what Wikipedia said, so it may not be right.
But you know what? I forgot to mention, maybe we'll go through it later, like after the fact, when we're done by track by track, but instrumentals, pretty big in the 1970s as singles.
Sure.
So, like, there's quite a few of them, especially this year. I have the top 10, and there's, like, two instrumentals in there.
Okay.
So like singles for like October of 76 anyway.
Okay.
So like part of me, in context, can understand why they would think to do that, but
right, if it was popular at the time.
Yeah, but still just like as far as instrumentals go, I mean, like, this is just sort of like feels like the band literally warming up.
Yeah.
And you're just like sort of like, find your seats, kids, the show's about to start, or like intermission. Well, it's an intermission. Straight up. It's just intermission. Whatever.
It is. It's got that, like, City Street saxophone intro, and then there's, like, a poppy section, which could almost sound like the Monkees or something, or Beatles-y.
Mm.
It's got that electric piano part, and there's a 12-string guitar riff that repeats. It's cinematic sounding, but...
Yeah. Like, Lou
to
Reed...
To a certain degree.
Lou Reed, Rock and Roll Heart, will return after these messages. And now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. Yes, okay, so we're firmly inside B with a Senselessly Cruel.
Track number 8, Senselessly Cool.
Fuck!
Track number 8, Senselessly Cruel. That's difficult for me to say.
This song sucks.
Nah, it's another throwback-y kind of song, like the 50s rock and early 60s rock. Like,
I know
don't
what he's
be cruel. Or,
yeah, you know. I know what he's going for. It may sound senselessly cruel for me to say as much that it's not good or that it sucks, but for me, it kind of sucks. There's just, this one and the next one like bleed together hardcore. And it just like, this is where like I was like feeling like my head starting to pound a little bit as I was like researching this, which is tough to do, by the way. It's just like, at least lately, this record, like, it needed something else. Lou really should have taken Clive Davis's help, but like, I really think, and this is the thing I admire about Lou Reed, I always have, but I also, and this album is actually a pretty good example of what makes him great and maddening at the same time, because he is so like gung-ho about like, no, I gotta trust my own instincts on everything.
Right.
And I do respect that. I respect that he's like not always thinking about money. Clive Davis, at the end of the day, they're friends, but that friendship's gonna fray because money and friendships fuck everything up.
Yeah,
it's like having a business relationship, and when you're Lou Reed and like doing the things you're gonna do in the 1970s, you know, you're following your own like muses wherever they are. And this one, I think, at least on record, I feel they mostly lead them astray. And I understand the want to like not let anybody like tell you what to do, because he's never let anybody really tell him what to do before. But you kind of wish he had been like a little bit more open to some help.
Right.
Just definitely. Like, if he could have like framed it in his own mind, that it would have worked. But it's like, I don't think that would have been him selling out, but maybe a part of him would have like viewed it that way. Though for his part, I know like he was happy with the record when it was ultimately done.
Yeah.
He's happy with every record once it's done.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he's proud of it, because he accomplished something. But, you know, speaking completely as a fan, like, it's just like, this song doesn't do much for me.
Yeah, it's got some cheesiness. It's like a first heartbreak kind of story song and a little bit of innocence in there. But then during the outro, it sounds like Bowie singing. Like,
oh,
it's the
yeah.
same kind of delivery and
I never really clocked that. I think just like I
like
must
resonance in his voice that Bowie does. Yeah.
I must have been taking an aspirin.
Taking a nap.
Because then you go right to our next song, "Claim to Fame,"
track number 9.
It just like right away, it's like bang, which it's like it sounds like two or three songs earlier. Like, it's because it just all bleeds together, and it's like talk talk yak yak, and I'm like, oh god.
Oh, I like this one. I like the
really?
Vocal delivery. Yeah, the electric piano is back. And it's got that R&B kind of uptown style to it.
I wish I liked it more. I wish I liked it at all. It's like,
I think it's just something about the vocal delivery. It doesn't really sound any different than the rest of the tracks on here, but I don't know, something about the way he sings those lines I really dig.
Fair enough.
Vocally. And it's got another long outro with the chorus repeated a whole lot of times.
Yeah.
Which he's a fan of on this record.
This is a thing where I wish this had been like another pass. Like there's a couple, this is like one of the, there's five songs on here, I think, that like, if they'd really been reworked into like something other than what they are here, these are like first drafts.
Yeah. And then it's got 12 tracks total. I mean, before he's at 8.
Yeah.
Nine,
he's,
you
I mean,
know,
like
it's
he's,
like, he didn't have to have 12.
Yeah. You could have left a couple of these off of here, but the album is like, even at like, I think these are all padding the time. That's
yeah.
the thing. Cause otherwise it's like, you're looking at an EP, mm-hmm. you know? You know, maybe even like a single.
Yeah, they're all pretty short. Yeah,
you know, it's like, so like there, it's just these, this album is like by and large a lot of filler. So, and like, and I hate to say that too, because I know how dismissive it is. It's like the reviews are not kind for this album. So
yeah.
like it's just a thing where like when push comes to shove, if I'm being completely honest with myself and you, gentle listener, that it's just not like the best, but there's stuff to cherry pick off this album.
Sure,
for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's some like, you know, below average material here. It's unfortunate, but it's true.
Well, I'm no stranger to being below average. so moving on to track 10, Vicious Circle.
This song, though, I will say, like, wholeheartedly is like one of my absolute favorite Lou Reed songs.
Yeah, and he doesn't say two-bit friends, he says so-called friends. Were you a little upset about that?
No, I like it.
I know how much you love the two-bit.
I know I love the two-bits, but I'm putting the two-bits aside for now, and I'm going to go to the so-calleds. And this is like a great alone in a crowded room like feeling. It's like, this is like complete loneliness. Now, contextually, I understand what's going on here. it's 3 or 4 in the morning. You're around a bunch of people that are just like doing, like, you know, let's just say, I don't know, coke, and just like they're all hanging out. You're hearing a lot of people talk, but like you're disconnected and disassociated from all of them. And he's like depressed.
Yeah.
This song is pure depression.
It's like a vicious circle. I mean, this can be, it could be addiction. It could be a toxic relationship of some kind, but being surrounded by all your friends, but then no one else is like stepping in to break this cycle.
Yeah. Know? And I don't know, I've hung out enough bars over the last, like, you know, 15 odd years. You can feel that sense of it. Like, just taking it personally. Like,
have I been here before?
Like yeah, it's just a lot of the sameness. You know, like it's this is a song about like the sameness of, like, you know, your surroundings and
monotony,
like,
of it all.
Yeah, it's heavy, man. It's really, really good. It's like, it's among his very best. I love the vocal delivery here.
Yeah, to go with the monotony, it's very low in pitch and volume. Some parts are almost buried in the mix.
Mm-hmm. This song's a treasure. It this was an early, like, favorite when I first got into, like, Lou Reed, because it was on that box set disc.
Box set, yeah.
The coveted second box set disc.
It's not easy to say either.
No, especially when I'm talking.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, this song rules. It's like, because some people think that they like problems and some people think that they don't. And for everybody who says yes, there's somebody who's staring saying don't. Just great shit. The other big line, like, later on, some people think that it's things that you do and others think that you were cold when you were hot.
Yeah.
That can be just like, for Lou personally, it's like you were a cold bastard, like, at your most popular. And he can, like, honestly be, like, starting to, like, feel, like, maybe a little sense of decline.
See, I didn't
here.
Get that part as hot.
Yeah.
Meaning that, but that's awesome. Yeah.
It's, like, yeah, I think this is, like some real...
The record's hot.
Yeah, like, there's some, like, real personal, like, introspection going on here for a minute in an album that's, like, basically with none. You know, it's, like, it's very, very loose, like, lyrically. But this is, like, a real big standout. This one and the one that closes out the record. Vicious Circle. It's just like all-timer. Wonderful song.
And then track 11, A Sheltered Life. This is a fun one.
This was an old Velvet Underground song.
Yes, from the VU days.
And the original version done on kazoo.
Of course it was.
It was great. This one...
this version, it's got like that nightclub lounge act.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, Richard Cheese could cover this tomorrow.
Yeah. Richard Cheese.
Yes, remember him?
Yeah, Lounge Against the Machine.
He's
right?
Still out there. He does weddings and bat mitzvahs. Okay. He's out there. He's for hire. Yeah, I mean, this one's fine. It's I guess musical wise, it's cute. I think that's.
It sounds like it could be from a musical.
Basically. Yeah, yeah, and like, you know, and lyrically, it's just like oh man, I haven't done anything with my life. I haven't even danced on a bearskin rug.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Never been to England, never taken dope or drugs. It's like, yeah.
I mean, I mean, it's like, I haven't done too much, like, insane with my life. I've done, like, one or two things. Yeah, sure. I mean, like, you know, I've led a dull life, but not necessarily a sheltered life.
Nah, he's, like, poking fun at the straight life.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, wants to lose my hometown ways. And...
Yeah, this is a thing where, like, ironically, Lou is getting pretty close to getting into a sheltered life himself.
Right.
He's just a few years away from that.
We're getting there.
He's getting there, but he's still not quite done partying and running around just yet.
Yeah. But so. In this, it sounds like, what is it, the country mouse trying to be the town mouse or longing to be the town mouse kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, it's cute. I think the original Velvet Underground song, like I said, there is a kazoo. It's basically just like a little acoustic guitar and then I'm just like noodling around. This one... And I guess I just prefer the shitty demo, weirdly enough. This one's fine. It's fine. It's like, it's definitely better than like Senselessly Cruel or something like that. It's like, which I found like irritating. This one is just, it's okay. But at the same time, I just like get to the last song. This one just doesn't do anything for me.
This one, I got like the spotlight and Lou in an ill-fitting tuxedo.
That's
like,
actually, yeah. Once again, you're coming up with music videos that should have been that never were. Yeah. You know, and I would love to see that. It's
damn,
like,
I missed my calling as a videographer.
I mean, Lou had a couple of like, you know, Lou had some good videos for some not so great songs. So this could have been another one. So it's unfortunate. But that's a sheltered life.
Sheltered life.
Yeah.
And then closing track, track number 12, Temporary Thing.
See, Temporary Thing is a close-up of, like, the guy in I'm Waiting for My Man. And Kix was a close-up of him. And Temporary Thing's an even tighter peek at him. Morally, I kind of, you know, it's like, you know, Groucho Marx said, bring me a rose or leave me alone. Like, it's not a temporary thing, but, you know, the lady should get off his back or split.
Fantastic song.
Yeah, it's another classic Addict narrative there.
It's just a banger, beginning to end. It's the most vulgar he gets on the record, straight up. Because right off the bat, he's like, hey now, bitch.
Yeah. That made me pause a little bit.
Now, baby, you better pack your things, get out of here quick. And then just the song is just nothing but the keyboard pounding away, and then the drums just like, what is he, just hitting the hi-hat the whole time? And then just like occasionally like pounding that drum, just like booch.
I have to listen to it again. Yeah. But I know the outro has some hand claps in it.
Oh yeah, the claps are great.
Yeah, I like claps.
But man, this song is just, yeah, it is an addiction song, but it's also just like, it's sweaty. It's just like the tone of it is great. Like just, I love the whole feel of it.
Yeah.
I love the lyrics, the whole,
and the narrator of it's like super duper defensive, like,
oh, big time. It's like
talking about her family, and you know,
if Requiem for a Dream was a musical, this would be like
fit in there.
This would fit right in there, you know. Yeah, it easily.
Like, it ain't like you'd never seen this thing before, and if it turns you, then turn around, you better hit the door. It's like, well, it's probably seeing him doing drugs of some kind, whether it's intravenously or not.
Oh yeah.
Because it's like she has the sheltered life, in his opinion, with your, what is it, your good breeding and your, you know.
Yeah, it is like, and this is a long line of songs of Lou just like being hypercritical of suburban life. I feel like it's part of the complex that he inherently has.
We've talked about, I think, almost every episode.
Yeah, but like it's just worth bringing up again because he is a kid, he was a guy, like he was a Coney Island baby, like you said. But then
off to Long Island.
Then he was off to Long Island, like, you know, somewhere around like 10 years old. But he carried the city with him, so he kind of got to be like the tough kid in like the suburban neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And then he spent like his late teens and early 20s like proving to himself probably primarily that he could handle the city life and all the roughness. But
yeah,
he may have went a little too far because he experimented a little too much with drugs, and he's still like shooting speed like a motherfucker, and he's still drinking way too much. He's got fame, he's got money, and he's got an addiction problem, but it's a temporary problem in his mind.
I can quit anytime.
Yeah, you know, I got this shit covered, man. It's a great junkie song. I'm thinking also of like Amy Winehouse's Rehab, or this song, or the title song Dirt from Alice in Chains from that album, specifically the song Junkhead. That's the one I'm thinking of. Just like any song where like the narrator is just like, I enjoy drugs and things are awesome, but this one is a little more self-aware.
Yeah.
And I think that's the main difference. It's like he is, a part of him knows that he's got a serious problem, but he's going to kick it at some point.
It, you know, and that could be any kind of addiction. People get addicted to gambling.
Yeah.
Or like even myself with smoking cigarettes. It's like, well, this bad thing happened to me, let me give it a little more time.
Right.
Like, oh, well, I've got this thing coming up and stressful. Well, after that, then I'll end. It just never ends.
Mm-hmm. And you're caught in a vicious circle there.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, vicious
circle. My sheltered life.
In your sheltered. Yeah, vicious. That's actually, you know, now I think about it, this is actually, the last three songs really do work well together.
It's like the triad of addiction.
Yeah. It kind of is. It's like that, like, I'm giving this album like an extra point because of that now.
Okay.
It really is a strong ending.
Lou, take an extra point for this one.
You got it. I mean, what else to say? I mean, this song, just I love the saxophone that you just like hear like
right
throughout the whole thing, especially as you get into those like final claps, you hear the faintest guitar throughout the entire song, right up until the end when like it finally feedbacks like into the outro.
Right.
Just Wonderful tune, just beginning to end.
It's a great closer for the record, yeah.
Fantastic closer, like an all-timer. It's like for a record that really wobbles. I mean, like he sure did like close it out properly. It's uh-huh. It's wonderful. It's just knocked out of the park.
I remember you.
Oh yeah, I play guitar for the whole show.
Yeah, for a while you didn't want to play it anymore. Is that true?
I didn't remember the way it was going.
That's over with, and you're playing again.
Oh yeah, I've got a guitar made. I've got there's 30 of them made so far. It's the Stuart Spector guitar.
What's your stage act like now? I haven't seen you in a while, as I said.
Well, I wanted to use video for a long time. See, now we have total control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I say we, I mean me and the guys in the group, the whole crew. And we're using video monitors, like 48 video monitors, which is another way of saying TV sets that are hooked up for video.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, you can use it to get, like, one of our, we have 48, we have banks of, 9 banks of 6. Mm-hmm. No, that's not 48, but that's 54. It's something close to that.
Nevertheless, maybe that's a lot of television sets on the stage. What, do you have them all on the stage or around the audience?
No, they surround the band.
Mm-hmm.
And they're 19-inch screens, black and white. And we have Sony Portapak videotape machines. And they're pre-made tapes mm-hmm. that I made. And it's automatic threading on these things. So you just put it in and bam, off goes your 48 video monitors. Plus there's a remote control unit so that I can, or whoever's running it, can have one going, two going, or two going at the same time. So these, you know, because I didn't want to have a light show because light shows are boring. Yeah. They're old and they're
you've done
tacky.
It.
Tacky is a tacky word and that applies to them.
Mm-hmm.
But they're fabulous. It's like the ultimate Rorschach.
Getting into the tour. I mean, this record, the record was what it was, but I will say, I'll put out a recommendation right now. As far as legal copies of live music that you can find, there's a pretty good one called Winter at the Roxy, mm-hmm. 1976, that features the Everyman Band like in Los Angeles. And the band is very, very tight. You hear a handful of songs off of this album, and they sound a lot better. So, like, I Believe in Love actually sounds a lot better live. This is just one of those records where, like, when it came to being on tour, they just pulled it together. Initially, the band was going to have the lead guitarist Bob Kulick in there,
mm-hmm.
and Lou didn't show up to rehearsals one day, or he showed up very late. So, but Bob knew like the songs, and he taught the Everyman Band the set list. And then when Lou saw that the band knew the songs, Lou was like, "You taught everybody the songs." And then Bob's like, "Yeah, I'm sorry, you weren't here. I'm sorry." And then Lou was like, "I wanted to do that. I wanted to teach them." And Bob's like, "I'm sorry." And so Lou went, "Well, you know what I got to do now? You're fired."
My God.
So that's when Jeffrey Ross officially like got in there like full time. And so the band started playing live, and that's when they found jazz trumpeter Don Cherry. Mm-hmm. That was by chance that Don and Lou, like, I think they met at like an airport.
Yeah, at LAX.
Yeah. So Don Cherry came on for a show.
It was at the Anaheim Convention Center.
And there is a recording of this show, one song in particular that's on, once again, I have to hit it. It's on that box set disc, and it is the reason to like seek this thing out. You can get it digitally, all right, but it's the version of Heroin that's on there.
Oh, right.
That sounds like Taps because Don Cherry's playing the trumpet on there. It's gorgeous. The song goes on for about 13 minutes or so, and man, it's like it's my favorite version of Heroin. That's awesome. Been recorded. It's gorgeous.
Okay. Well, Don Cherry, he played with Ornette Coleman back in the day. And Lou, like, knew him from that, knew him from an album cover.
Yeah.
And recognized him at the airport at LAX. Yeah, he invited him. Actually, I think that story was Don Cherry was in the airport leaving to go back home, and he got him to stay an extra day and play with them that night at the Anaheim Convention Center. Oh, and then about Don Cherry, there's a quote from Michael Fanfara. Don Cherry is positively spiritual on stage. He was like some ghost that was floating above the ground. He'd suddenly come creeping in from between the amplifiers, and all of a sudden, he's here like an apparition. Then he'd hit two or three notes that are outside, take a Sunday stroll, and then come back in. But those notes added a lot of meaning to what Lou was saying. Lou loved him, and he loved Lou. And it was like a jazzy live band in some ways.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as punk was happening, he had like one of the best... You know,
it's like it is like a weird fusion. It's and like I would say like it's a better representation like live, which I really wish the album had covered, was able to capture. Lou needed help. Like he just shouldn't have been doing this alone. It also probably would have behooved them to have like another guitarist on the record too. Because it's all just
like
Lou.
In the past. Yeah,
yeah. In the past, Lou's like you know not afraid to like let people you know shred basically. Yeah. And, like, there's a little bit of that going on the album proper. Like, mm-hmm. Rock and Roll Heart, the title song, that kind of shreds. It's really good. I really like the guitar work on that one. But, I don't know. Live, it just sounds a lot better. And, yeah. So, Lou does a pretty decent tour. The one thing to highlight about this tour, that they put about at least 48 televisions on stage. And I've seen some of the remaining televisions at the Lou Reed exhibit.
Oh, nice.
A few of them have survived, but these were the old, like, televisions.
Tube televisions.
The big-ass tube TVs that they found on the street.
Yeah, Mick Rock and Jeffrey Ross and Lou found them on the street. And
like, that's probably, like, story. From at least, like, the 60s or whatever. So these things must have weighed a ton. And as the tour rolled on, they kept on breaking TVs. And on the TVs were, like, they were either running static or like recycled footage of Lou dancing on stage. It was a Warhol-esque sort of stage show.
That's exactly what it sounds like. Yeah.
It just and like it's. I think seeing that tour live would have been like something really special.
Yeah. Although, even just for that, you know, with abstract patterns and stuff of Lou dancing, and then I think they even said there was some like. I don't think they had antennas, but you get some news reports
right.
of the day on there. So it was all different things happening. On
it's
all
pretty.
These
it's a good
48 screens behind them.
I mean, like. U2 would do like a really annoying tour called the Pop Tour in 1998 or so.
Okay.
That was like giant like TVs and then like they had a whole thing all throughout the 90s where they were like flipping through channels and stuff. Major acts would like basically do like more modern versions of the same sort of idea, but Lou Reed was like doing something really novel for the time especially. And when I saw the exhibit at the museum, they showed like the original like looped footage of like Lou on stage.
Wow.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I do have like some stuff of that saved. So like I promise we'll put this up on the Instagram.
Yeah, we have a lot to put up on Instagram.
Yeah, I think we've already promised several things that may not have gone up on there, but we'll try to get it up there. We're working on it. We're definitely not fucking around with Twitter. Not with Elon Musk.
I don't see the point. Really,
no, now that
for a podcast to be on Twitter.
I mean. Not this.
Like, haven't we talked enough?
I think we have.
Got to talk more? In a certain amount of characters? I don't see that.
Yeah. There were several reviews for Rock and Roll Heart, none of them very positive. One of them was from Enemy, from a guy named Kent Paul. His big pull quote for that was, "Certainly don't bother with this record, unless, of course, you like watching paint dry."
Oh boy.
Yeah, pretty great. Stephen DeMorest of Cream magazine. "Lou promised us rock and roll, but I call this stuff and nonsense." Because rock and roll fart was right there, but
what did he say? Stuff and nonsense?
Yeah.
And he's a writer.
Jeez. Yeah, that guy got paid to put that in there. So, you know, bully for him. Good work if you can find it. But the big one I really want to talk about is this guy, Giovanni Dadadomo. D-A-D-O-M-O.
Sounds like he's half Italian and half Japanese.
Right, and I don't know if that was either, but apparently he was... I'm unfamiliar, so I'm telling you, Paul, and we were talking earlier, it didn't ring a bell for you. So, and you know way more than I do, but...
It's probably more like Giovanni Diadomo.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you got it. He was a music journalist and a singer of a novelty band called The Sniveling Shits.
Oh.
And he gave Rock and Roll Heart a quote-unquote "put your own stars here" review. And here's a couple of excerpts from it. See, I've been playing this bastard solidly for the last 5 days, and I've still no idea if I love it or hate it. One moment I feel totally up about it and feel it's the best thing Lou's done in years. His cleanest, simplest, most satisfying work since Loaded. That's the Velvet Underground's Loaded. And then I think, no, I'm wrong. It's a totally bland, patronizing piece of shit, and Lou's simply playing Warhol games with the people who care about his music. Dadadomo continues elsewhere. Basically, it sounds pretty uneven and boring, right? Well, in a way it is. And I'm not too sure about recommending the record, hence no stars, fill in your own, to non-readies. I've never heard fans called readies before. Because most of the fun I've had from it is in wondering about exactly what Lou's up to most of the time. And I don't really think that's what rock and roll is all about, although it's certainly what Andy Warhol's all about. I should pause for a moment. This guy has a real problem with Andy Warhol. Like, he started the article saying, I wish Andy Warhol was dead. He ends it saying, is Andy Warhol dead yet? Oh, it's God. Like, he's got a real problem with Andy Warhol. Anyway, continuing. Which is why I'm on the edge. Most of the time, rock and roll heart makes me feel uncomfortable, and what I wanted to feel was happy. So I guess in a way, it's stimulating. Of course, if you don't think about it too much, you can dance to it. That's just as true of the Disco Duck Farrago. And I have not looked up the word Farrago, F-A-R-R-A-G-O. So what does that mean? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I was an English major.
Yeah.
But I didn't graduate.
It's fine. But I know what he's talking about, Disco Duck. But contextually, yeah, he's just saying, this is just a thing that you just dance to and don't think about it. Which is basically kind of more or less the conclusion I came to as well.
Right.
You know, it's just like, if you're not really paying attention to it, it's like, it's fine, it's background noise.
Yeah, it's
like,
not bad.
Yeah,
it's not stimulating.
Right. I mean, you got those last three, those last core three, like that, those last songs that like close out their record. That's mm-hmm. where Lou seemed to like finally wake up and get a little more personal and fun. But, you know. Anyway. Oh shit, choose to choose, make up your own mind. I love Lou Reed. End quote.
Okay.
So, you know, that like this record, not the worst thing Lou Reed's ever done, not by a long shot. It's, for my money, it's definitely better than his initial first solo album.
Right.
You know, there's more going on there. I like the swing, you know, and because I've heard stuff live, like, performed, I do think the band was there. It's just, it's a rush job, I think is where I land
with
this album.
Could be, yeah.
I don't know where you ultimately land on it, Paul, like, at the end of the day.
I think a lot of the lyrics were just kind of innocent and really, really basic.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think really spending more time like crafting these songs and woodshedding some of the stuff, it does seem like a rush job, like you said. Like,
yeah, I mean, like, again, like, from...
A lot of these sound like placeholder riffs or placeholder lyrics and vocal takes, and I'm not saying it's bad, of course, but I'm not going to come back to it.
That's basically like that. Been my way the entire time. It is, again, it's like this record was started at the beginning of 1 month and then just done. Like, wrote, conceived the whole nine yards and recorded.
If I do a vinyl DJ thing sometime soon, I'm definitely leaving that on the shelf and not even bringing it in my road case, you know?
Yeah, you don't...
Because there's so much better stuff or stuff people will dance to or be more into.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah...
I will go to bat for Temporary Thing and mm-hmm. And Vicious Circle, like, any day of the week. Those are great, great songs. They're gems. But, like, you're right. Most of the record is just... It's a rainy day album. I said that at the beginning, and that's still where I land with it.
Right.
And I was expecting to, like, really go to bat harder for it, but it's been difficult. That's the truth.
It's definitely not for passive fans that only know the hits.
Yeah, and it's like even for advanced Lou heads, as we're
advanced Lou heads
or readies. Excuse me, we're advanced readies now.
Should we name this advanced Lou heads?
Yes, yeah. That's where season two is.
See if at advanced Lou heads is taken, or if the hashtag is a thing. Hashtag advanced Lou heads.
Hashtag advanced Lou heads all over Instagram. Destroy all radio. That's good. All right. Well, we were underwhelmed by Rock and Roll Heart. Yep. I was hoping for better, but you know, it is what it is. This is just it's just a very quick stave off bankruptcy. Let's just get this done so we can get on the road album. That's
sure. The
long and short of it. At the end of the day, that's what history is going to have to leave it at. But next time, we're going to get into something way more significant.
Way more fun.
Yeah, and controversial, and it's the album, without giving too much away, it's got the greatest song of Lou Reed's career and quite possibly the worst song of Lou Reed's career back to back.
Peaks and valleys, yes. Man.
Next time we're talking about Street Hassle.
That'll be episode 9.
All right. Until next time, take care, everybody.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Yep. Hey, everybody, I just want to let you know, we are big fans of other podcasts. Mm-hmm. And this episode, I want to recommend local, like a podcast, Legends of Philadelphia. And in particular, their episode, The Botched Bicentennial, since Rock and Roll Heart came out in 1976. Learn in about how Philadelphia had one of the lamest bicentennial celebrations in the entire United States
of America. Cradle of Liberty. Right?
In the cradle of Liberty. Well, up in New York City, as we learned, there was a major drug smuggling operation going on, and the President of the United States and the Vice President were like pinning medals on Lady Liberty all over again. Philadelphia was just sort of there. So learn all about that. Check out Legends of Philadelphia. Great show. Our sources are the books Lou Reed, A Life by Anthony DeCurtis, Dirty Boulevard, The Life and Music of Lou Reed by Aidan Levy, and additional sources by Instagram accounts The Lou Reed Project and Weapons.etc. Special thanks in particular to Weapons.etc, Michael Ramirez, for providing additional quotes and some of the additional audio heard on this program. Yes, okay, so we're firmly inside B.